The Katra Podcast, conversations for the curious, essential knowledge, simplified. Your gateway to essential ideas that matter most. This audio summary has been prepared with the help of a Katra AI. Welcome back to the Deep Dive. Today, we are strapping in to challenge one of history's most romanticized stories, the Italian Renaissance.
Yeah, that image of, you know, Florence genius popping up everywhere.
Exactly. We're moving way beyond that. We're digging into Jerry Broughton's fantastic and I think quite provocative revisionist history, the Renaissance.
And revisionist is definitely the right word. I mean, the story we usually get, Europe wakes up after the quote-unquote Dark Ages, rediscovers classical stuff, and boom, masterpieces.
Right. But Broughton basically says, hold on, that story is, well, it's just not the full picture. It's actually pretty misleading.
Mm-hmm. His whole point, the core of what we're exploring today, is that this period, roughly 1400 to 1600, wasn't just European. It was actually the first real era of globalization.
Globalization. Wow. So messy, complex.
Totally. Collaborative. Yes. Fueled by trade, by contact, by, you know, intense interactions with cultures far beyond Italy or even Europe.
And that's why this deep dive matters so much for you listening today, right? Understanding our own globalized world where everything feels interconnected.
Yeah, the roots go deep. And Broughton helps us dismantle this myth that amazing things only happen in isolation, this idea of cultural exceptionalism.
And progress, as you said, has always been more of a team sport.
Exactly.
Okay, so to rewrite a story this big, you need someone with serious chops. Tell us about Jerry Broughton.
Well, Broughton is a professor of Renaissance studies at Queen Mary University of London. He's got decades of experience, but what's really interesting is his approach. It's super interdisciplinary.
So not just looking at paintings?
Not at all. He's looking at maps, trade routes, financial ledgers, the stuff that actually funded the art and the ideas.
I loved that about his perspective. You mentioned his book, A History of the World in 12 Maps, before we started recording, that tells you straight away his focus is global. It's about connections.
Right. And it's very materialist. He wants to know how things were made, how they were paid for.
Right.
He looks at trade manifests, navigational charts, account books.
The practical stuff.
The practical stuff. But here's the real kicker, I think. His language skills. He actually accesses primary sources in Arabic and Persian.
Wow. That's huge.
It is. Because it means he's not just getting the European side of the story about, say, the Ottoman Empire. He could read what they were writing themselves.
Which almost no Western scholars can do. So he builds this genuinely global picture.
Precisely.
Okay, so let's dive into his main argument. He says the whole rediscovery narrative, it's flawed.
Fundamentally flawed, yeah. Because the classical knowledge, Plato, Aristotle, the maths, the science, it wasn't really lost to be rediscovered.
It was just somewhere else.
Exactly. It was actively preserved, studied, and critically built upon in the Islamic world for centuries.
So the big revisionist point is Europe's greatest hits, the art, the science, the philosophy, they weren't just spontaneous European genius. They were shaped profoundly by exchange with the Islamic world, with Asia, with Africa.
Yes, through trade, through knowledge transfer, through direct cultural contact. It's a massive shift in how we should think about it.
So stop seeing it as this isolated European miracle.
And start seeing it as the first truly global cultural movement. Yeah. Roughly 1400 to 1600, Broughton just systematically shows the links, European art influenced by Islamic geometry, science boosted by Islamic mathematics, even technology like printing having roots or parallels in China.
It's a story of synthesis, really. Collaboration, not isolation.
Absolutely.
And I found it fascinating where he chooses to start the story, not Florence, right?
No, not Florence. He kicks off with a major geopolitical event. The Ottoman conquest of Constantinople in 1453.
Okay, why there? That seems counterintuitive for a story about the European Renaissance.
Well, think about it. Suddenly, you have this incredibly powerful, sophisticated Islamic empire right on Europe's doorstep. It completely shakes up the old trade routes through the Mediterranean.
Ah, so it forces Europeans to look for new ways east, for spices, for trade.
Exactly. It intensifies competition, forces innovation in shipbuilding and navigation, and ultimately fuels the voyages of Columbus and Da Gama. It puts global interaction into overdrive.
But it wasn't just conflict, was it? Broughton talks about cultural dialogue, too.
Oh, absolutely. He uses the amazing example of the Venetian painter, Gentile Bellini.
The one who went to Istanbul.
Yeah. He was sent by the leader of Venice, the Doge, to work directly in the court of the Ottoman Sultan, Mehmed II. This is high-level diplomacy through art.
Incredible. So it reframes the Ottomans not just as the enemy, but as patrons, as a cultural power in their own right.
Precisely. influencing European art, engaging in dialogue, and crucially, the knowledge flow wasn't one way.
Right. Europe was getting a huge amount from the Islamic world.
Astronomy, medicine, mathematics. Things that Islamic scholars had preserved from the ancient Greeks and then significantly advanced over centuries. Europe was, in many ways, catching up.
Okay, that idea of exchange leads us neatly into humanism. We tend to think of humanism as, you know, very lofty, reading Plato just because.
Right, purely intellectual. But Broughton pulls it right down to earth. He says, look, the Studia Humanitatis, the actual program, was intensely practical.
Practical how?
It was about teaching rhetoric, classical Latin, persuasive writing, skills needed by the people actually running the show in the Italian city-states.
Ah, so for diplomats, secretaries, merchants.
Exactly. They needed to write elegantly and persuasively for legal documents, for trade negotiations, for civic speeches. Humanism was essentially elite job training for a globalizing world.
That makes so much sense. And it connects to Machiavelli too, doesn't it? The Prince.
Yes. Instead of seeing it as this purely cynical, evil book, Broughton frames it as a very pragmatic, clear-eyed look at how power actually works in that competitive, secularizing world.
A shift away from purely religious morality towards, well, real politic.
You got it. Understanding power on its own terms.
And this desire to understand, to rationalize, it spills over into technology and art.
Definitely. There's a deep link Broughton explores between the way artists started to see and represent the world and the broader cultural push to measure, map, and control it.
Okay, let's talk tech. The printing press. Gutenberg, around 1450, huge amplifier.
Massive. Suddenly knowledge isn't just confined to handwritten manuscripts. It can be replicated, standardized, spread incredibly fast. It fuels the Reformation, scientific exchange, everything.
And the other big one, linear perspective in art. Brunelleschi, Alberti.
Yeah. And again, Broughton stresses this wasn't just an artistic trick to make paintings look realistic. It was a mathematical system.
A way to rationalize sight and space.
Exactly. Based on geometry. And here's the cool link.
Yeah.
The same geometric principles that let an artist render a building perfectly.
Were the same ones navigators were using to map the globe?
You see. Or merchants were using for accounting. It's all part of the same drive to measure, rationalize, and ultimately control the world. Often for commercial gain.
Which explains someone like Leonardo da Vinci. His genius wasn't just art. It was that mix of art, anatomy, engineering.
Totally interdisciplinary. Driven by this intense curiosity to understand and master the observable world.
But, and this is a big but, we have to talk about where the money came from, the engine driving all this. Broughton is really unflinching here.
He absolutely is. Chapter 5 confronts it directly. The so-called age of discovery.
Mm-hmm.
It wasn't just heroic exploration.
It was driven by commerce and religion, sure, but it immediately led to exploitation on a massive scale.
Yeah. The creation of the first truly global economy had a horrific dark side. You have European diseases wiping out huge percentages of indigenous populations in the Americas.
The violent conquests of the Aztec and Inca empires.
And the establishment of the transatlantic slave trade, bringing enslaved Africans over to work, primarily on sugar plantations, to generate wealth.
And Broughton makes the explicit link, this wealth generated through violence and exploitation.
Was channeled back to Europe. And directly funded a lot of the High Renaissance.
Mm-hmm.
The patrons, like the Medici or the Popes, their wealth was in part built on this emerging global system of extraction.
It's such a powerful and uncomfortable contradiction. You look at these beautiful sculptures and paintings, and you have to ask about the source of the funds.
It forces a reevaluation. And to hammer home the point that Europe wasn't alone in exploring, Broughton brings up Zhang He.
The Chinese admiral.
Yes, leading those enormous Chinese maritime expeditions in the early 15th century, well before the Europeans rounded Africa.
Yeah.
It shows global exploration was happening elsewhere, sometimes with more advanced technology.
So Europe wasn't necessarily leading, it was joining, competing in this already existing global network.
Exactly. Vying for dominance, certainly, but not inventing global interaction from scratch.
Okay, there's so much here. Let's try to pull out some key themes, the big takeaways from Broughton's argument.
I think the first, maybe the most central, is that commerce was the engine of culture. Plain and simple. The art, the science, it didn't just happen. It was underwritten by the profits of international trade, banking, finance.
Like the Medici in Florence, their power and patronage came directly from their banking and trade networks.
Absolutely. And the reflection for us today is pretty direct, isn't it? Who funds innovation now?
Right. Big tech companies, venture capital, governments. And what strings are attached? What are the economic realities behind the breakthroughs we celebrate?
Okay, theme two. Knowledge is collaborative creation. This is the direct challenge to the myth of rediscovery.
The idea that what Europe found wasn't lost, it was just elsewhere, being actively used and developed.
Yes, in places like Cordoba, Baghdad, Cairo. As long as scholars weren't just passive librarians, they were actively translating, commenting on, and advancing Greek knowledge and adding their own discoveries.
So innovation arises from synthesis, like the philosopher Ficino in Florence studying Plato.
But relying heavily on Arabic commentaries to even understand the text properly, it's about connection and translation, not solitary genius.
Got it.
And the third theme?
The ambiguity and anxiety of progress. The Renaissance wasn't some calm, stable, golden age. It was actually an era of profound crisis and disruption.
You had the Reformation splitting Christianity, Copernicus radically changing our view of the cosmos, these often violent encounters with new cultures.
Exactly. It was messy, uncertain, anxious. Progress and crisis went hand in hand.
Which feels, well, it feels very familiar, doesn't it? Living through rapid change today, tech disruption, social upheaval.
It really does. Broughton reminds us that feeling of uncertainty alongside progress isn't new. It might be inherent to periods of great change.
Broughton also has a way with words. Some of his core ideas are just so concise and powerful.
Yeah, they really stick with you. Like his take on rediscovery, he says, and I'm paraphrasing slightly here, what we call Renaissance rediscovery of classical knowledge would be better understood as Renaissance encounter with living traditions of scholarship.
Encounter. That's such a key word. It implies an active exchange, not just finding something dusty on a shelf.
Right. It makes the Islamic world an active participant, a vital intermediary, changes the whole dynamic.
And he pushes back hard against the great man theory of history.
Oh, yeah. He basically says the greatest innovations all emerge from the intersection of multiple cultural traditions, not from the isolated genius of individual Europeans.
Which is such a needed correction to how we often learn history, focusing on individual heroes.
And that leads to his fundamental plea, really. To understand the Renaissance properly, we must abandon the comfortable fiction that cultural development occurs within clearly defined geographical and civilizational boundaries.
Because creativity happens at the crossroads. At the intersections.
That's where the magic happens, according to Broughton.
So how do we use this? What are the real-life applications of this different view of the Renaissance?
Well, for personal growth, it's a clear call to seek out diversity. If innovation thrives on intersection, then actively read outside your field, travel as you can, learn languages, talk to people with different backgrounds.
Don't just stay in your intellectual comfort zone.
Exactly, because that's where you get the synthesis, the new ideas.
Yeah.
And professionally.
Build diverse teams, right. Break down those silos between departments or disciplines.
Absolutely. The people who can bridge different worlds, like the humanist, bridge classical learning and practical needs, they're invaluable. People who can translate between, say, tech and marketing, or science and policy.
And maybe the biggest application is for critical thinking.
How so?
Use Broughton's method. When you hear any dominant narrative, historical or even in the news today, ask, whose story is this? Whose interests does it serve?
And crucially, what perspectives, what economic realities, what inconvenient truths might be left out?
Yeah. Question the boundaries.
Okay, final thoughts. What surprised you most or what's the biggest thing you're taking away?
For me, honestly, it was that stark connection between the immense wealth funding the beauty of the High Renaissance and its often brutal origins in trade, exploitation, and the slave trade. You can't separate them. Acknowledging that complexity, that contradiction, feels essential.
Mm-hmm. That's powerful. For me, I think the most valuable and actually quite inspiring lesson is just how fundamentally collaborative human creativity is. By showing the deep contributions from the Islamic world, from Asia, Broughton doesn't diminish European achievements. He puts them in a richer, more accurate global context.
It offers a model, maybe, for tackling our own global challenges.
I think so. Through cooperation, through recognizing we all build on each other's knowledge, rather than thinking we can solve things in isolation.
A hopeful note to end on, even amidst the complexities.
Yeah. A necessary one, I think.
See you next time with another remarkable thinker. Another powerful book, and another idea that has shaped our world. This audio summary is brought to you by Akatra Foundation.